flies and the ache of longing. Whether the platinum-haired guy reciprocated those feelings or not was a mystery. Either way, not my business. Tobe stood quietly behind Alton, his broad back reflected in three of the rippling mirrors. The murmurs in the crowd died down as we all listened to what the director of the San Diego Coven had to say. I was still processing the fact that I was inside a freaking coven, surrounded by witches, warlocks, mythical monsters, and a ton of... well, a ton of magic.
As mentioned in my message request to have you gather here at this hour, there have been some new and unexpected developments with the bestiary. For the purpose of avoiding panic and unnecessary concern, however, we've held off on telling y'all about what happened. Now that the problem is contained, it's time for you to know that 7 days ago, one of the gargoyles in the bestiary escaped.
He paused, allowing the collective gasp to rise from the crowd, and nodded at Wade, who straightened his back with beaming pride in response.
Wade Crowley, one of our exceptional warlocks, was quick to go after the beast and return it safely to its glass box.
Alton smiled, then looked at me, and I froze, almost hearing heads turn as people suddenly paid attention to me.
He had help from a new yet unexpected member of our coven, whom you will all be introduced to shortly.
Oh, God. In hindsight, I was thankful I didn't have any telepathic abilities, like hearing thoughts. Dealing with a tidal wave of emotions was one thing, but having my brain bombarded with a flurry of random words and thoughts? Ugh, I would have ended up hospitalized and heavily medicated for sure.
I want you all to be more vigilant going forward.
Alton continued, drawing the audience's focus back to him. Only as I let out the nervous breath I'd been holding did I realize that I'd gripped Wade's hand, squeezing tight for some kind of comfort. I looked down, getting visual confirmation of our unexpected physical contact, then up at him. Though his expression remained stoic, he was shocked. I could feel it. When did I take his hand, though? Did I just black out when they all looked at me or something? Sorry, I murmured, instantly letting go. My palms were clammy. I rubbed them against my jeans and focused on Alton once more.
We've added a security detail to the bestiary in order to assist Tobe. But we have yet to identify how the gargoyle got out in the first place. Tobe's magical abilities are raw, and frankly, it is up to all of us to ensure that further incidents do not occur. If they do, I trust you all know what to do, as you've all been given your full bestiary induction.
The magicals in the crowd nodded in response, prompting Alton to smile and bring his hands together in an enthusiastic clap.
Now, I know we're all still getting used to the idea of a bestiary in our coven, but it is for the greater good. Given the high percentage of mediocrity in this place, we can at least excel in looking after the bestiary that fuels our entire society.
Yeah, it's a bang-up job we're doing so far,
a young warlock said, somewhere behind me. I looked over my shoulder and identified him quickly, based on the smirk which accompanied his statement. He was about as tall as me, and quite handsome, too, with short black hair and piercing blue eyes. He had the cutest dimples, and that triggered a warning inside me. The good-looking ones were usually jerks. Case in point, Wade Crowley.
That's Garrett Keitler, pompous jerk extraordinaire, Wade muttered, following my gaze. If you ever need a contrarian to paint the coven in an ugly light, he's the guy you want to talk to.
I don't know. You seem to be doing a pretty good job yourself, if you ask me. I shot back with a smirk. He took it seriously, and I felt he was genuinely offended. For some reason, I didn't like making him feel that way, so I quickly brushed over it, shifting the focus back to Cutie Pie Garrett. If he hates this place so much, why doesn't he just leave then? Wade shrugged.
He doesn't hate it. He just doesn't like it.
Is there a difference?
There is when you're part of a coven, he replied. He's been in two other covens before this. I don't know how he ended up here, but it wasn't because of his exemplary track record. He's an excellent warlock, highly skilled in his craft, but his demeanor can be difficult to handle. He messed up something at some point. You don't get sent to the San Diego Coven for high points.
What points? And how come this coven is like detention to magicals? I asked, getting more confused the more Wade talked.
I'm guessing Alton hasn't told you about the point system. You'll find out soon enough. But in short, your performance and actions create points, which go into the coven. At the end of the year, a line is drawn, and the top 5 performing covens in the States get substantial prizes, mostly in cash and artifacts. As for the detention part, I don't know. It's always been like this. Alton is trying to change that, but with the characters we've got in-house right now, it doesn't look like he'll succeed. Alton was still going on about their efforts to improve the coven when Garrett spoke up again.
With all the mediocres in this joint, I must say you're quite the dreamer, Director Waterhouse.
Alton responded to Garrett's remark with a dry smile and a shrug.
Well then, Mr. Keitler, perhaps if you spent more time actively involved in actual coven work, instead of bragging to your parents over Skype about how good a job you're doing here, we might get ahead a little faster.
Alton's sting was deep and painful. Chuckles erupted from the crowd. I got a quick look at Garrett. He was fuming, but there was nothing he could do other than cross his arms and scowl at Alton. I had mixed feelings about Garrett at that point. On the one hand, the more I looked at him, the more handsome he got. Given how little socializing I'd done in my lifetime, and now that I was suddenly faced with people with whom I could be myself, my hormones were starting to loosen up a little. On the other hand, he seemed obnoxiously arrogant, although the animosity that Wade displayed toward him made Garrett even more interesting. I was officially intrigued, and abstaining from a final verdict, other than the fact that he was really cute, for the time being.
Don't sulk, Mr. Keitler,
Alton continued.
I wouldn't pick on you if I didn't think you have what it takes to be a top performer in this coven. You just have to put in the effort, that's all. Anyway, moving on. Like I said, we're hoping to get a higher score by the end of this year. Last year was quite dismal, to say the least.
We only got 203 points, Wade whispered.
How bad is that? I replied. The San Francisco Coven took the 5th spot with 9,789 points.
Oh, okay.
Clearly the San Diego Coven had its work cut out for it. But was it worth it? How much money were we talking about? What artifacts were handed out as prizes? I made more mental notes to ask Alton later. My skull was becoming a pile of index cards and sticky notes.
The bestiary has been checked from top to bottom, and there was nothing on the cameras,
Alton said.
So please, all of you, be careful. Unauthorized access to the bestiary will be severely punished.
I do apologize, Tope said, staring at the marble floor beneath him, his head bowed in what felt like shame.
This has never happened before. The bestiary has always been fully secured. I've never even needed additional security.
Dob, please.
Alton said gently, placing a hand on his shoulder.
Do not blame yourself in any way. We don't know how the gargoyle made it out of its glass box, but we will find out sooner or later. In the meantime, we just need to be more vigilant. We'll be deploying a few patrols through the city as well, particularly where the gargoyle was captured. The creature is likely to have left energy residue in the area. Other monsters still running loose might be drawn to it, which would bode well for our bestiary. The more creatures we capture, the more energy is provided to our covens, and of course, the more points for us.
I'll post a list of names for patrol rotations by midnight tonight outside the dining hall,
O'Halloran interjected.
There will be short, 3-hour shifts in pairs in allocated districts of the city. Nothing too difficult. Just make sure you stock up on glass jars.
That being said, I will let you know of any future developments.
Alton said, then smiled at me.
Now, I want you all to meet Harley Smith, who was quick-witted and brave enough to assist Wade in capturing the gargoyle.
Oh, crap, no. As soon as he mentioned my name, my body was nearly crushed under the landslide of emotions pummeling me from all sides. I instinctively grabbed Wade's forearm and immediately chastised myself for it, but it was the only thing I could think of. The harder I squeezed, the less intense the emotions of 200 magicals felt. This was all so new and heavy. Ouch, Wade issued a low-voiced warning. Sorry, I murmured, but didn't let go. Instead, I squeezed harder, overwhelmed by so many feelings at once.
Harley will be with us for the next month, and she'll be attending classes with the juniors,
Alton added.
Given her late discovery, Harley is quite far behind, but I trust she will...
The mirrors behind him and Tobe all started to hum, their surfaces rippling more visibly and their bronze frames squeaking at the joints. The crowd forgot about me as they all looked at the mirrors, along with Alton and Tobe, who moved farther to the side. I gasped, finally able to properly breathe again. Oh, man, I need to tell Alton not to mention me to people anymore, or ever again, especially in a crowd, I muttered, then wiped the sweat off my forehead, letting go of Wade's arm. I got a peculiar whiff of disappointment from him, before the hum got louder, reminding me that something weird was going on with those mirrors. What's happening? I asked.
Someone is coming through, Wade replied.
Is that normal?
Normal, yes, but it's usually expected. This wasn't scheduled.
How do you know? I asked.
Because Alton clearly wasn't expecting it, as evidenced by the look on his face, Wade grumbled, prompting me to get a better look at Alton.
He was right. Alton was stunned, and not in a good way. Chapter 12. So you people just, what, travel through mirrors? Like parallel dimensions or something? I asked. I'd stopped wondering how weird things happened from the moment I accidentally tossed my first grade nemesis across the road with just the power of my mind. I was more interested in the actual process.
You're not too far from the truth, actually, Wade said. The coven is in an interdimensional pocket, like a strip between blobs of space. But the strip is infinite, and you can sort of poke it in different places. Think of our world as a giant bag of blobs, bundled and glued together with this interdimensional strip. The mirrors are like holes in different blobs. You step into one, and you pass through the strip, then make it out into another blob. Like teleporting. Except you don't get disintegrated and reintegrated upon arrival to your destination, Wade replied. Mirror travel only works with a particular spell and if you know your destination. Any mirror will work. It's an old spell, conjured up by ancient Egyptian warlocks. They were the first to discover the magical properties of reflective surfaces. I nodded slowly, watching in awe as three figures slowly emerged from the mirrors, like bodies coming up to the surface of a mercurial lake. Two warlocks and one witch came forward, all three in their late 30s or 40s, and superbly dressed. Had this not been a magical gathering, I could have easily seen them sauntering down a runway for custom tailor-made outfits, with a predominance of dark blues and gold, as they all seemed to adhere to a similar color palette. Are those uniforms? I whispered, taking in every detail, every crease and handcrafted button, every thread and shimmering lapel. The warlocks were in full suits, complete with waistcoats and ascots, while the witch had opted for an elegant skirt and jacket combo. You could call them uniforms, Wade replied, his voice filled with tension. Navy blue and gold are the colors of the California Mage Council. They tend to wear them when they attend assemblies such as this.
Oh, this is the Mage Council, I murmured.
Part of it, yes. There are seven members, but as you can see, only three came to visit this time around.
So we weren't expecting them?
Nope, which is why I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, I can feel that,
I replied. "And that's creepy," he shot back. "You'd better get used to it," I shrugged in response. "Who are these mages, exactly?" As Wade pointed them out to me, I couldn't ignore Alton's displeasure at seeing them here. They made him uncomfortable for some reason. Putting two and two together, I figured this unannounced visit had something to do with the gargoyle getting out of the bestiary.
"That's Leonidas Levi, the deciding vote in most council-related conversations, and one of the most powerful warlocks I've ever met," Wade said, nodding toward the eldest of the group, a tall man with salt-and-pepper hair and dark brown, almost black eyes.
My gaze wandered to his ring, a solid gold piece with a multitude of gemstones that glistened under the amber light. "The other is Nicholas Mephiles, revered alchemist, and one of the very few to achieve transmutation of stone to gold," Wade continued, pointing at the short and stocky warlock, whose waistcoat looked a size too small and whose reddish beard covered a double chin.
"So what, a genius?"
Wade nodded slowly.
"You could say that, yes. Creating gold out of stone takes very precise formulation and time, and a lot of power. He single-handedly funds the Sacramento Coven, and I think there are at least 10 gargoyles in our bestiary that came out of his purges."
"Ah, the price paid for gold, right?" I concluded.
"Exactly. Everything costs with chaos," Wade said. "And that's Imogene Whitehall."
Imogene had my full attention. She reminded me of a fairy tale elf, with delicate, diaphanous skin, sky blue eyes that felt eerily familiar, and a cascade of pale blonde, almost white hair that poured over her back and shoulders. She was tall and graceful, with soft features, and the warmest smile I'd ever seen, directed at me. Crap, she's looking at me. I'd quickly learned to dislike the attention in that assembly hall, but Imogene felt quiet. The emotions coming off her were unclear at best. I felt that relieving and intriguing at the same time. She gave me a brief nod, then shifted her focus to Alton, who stepped forward to address the council.
"What's the deal with Imogene?" I asked, looking at Wade.
I was surprised to see and feel him like that. He was in sheer awe of her, as if gazing upon a star. His reaction seemed perfectly understandable, given that she was by far one of the most beautiful and surreal creatures I'd ever come across. Wade had every right to crush on her. She'd chosen a simple pencil skirt and smart jacket, with gold threaded vest and white shirt, diamonds dangling from her delicate earlobes, and matching the tear-shaped pendant resting in the dip between her neck and collarbones. It all looked perfect on her. Sculptors and painters of the Renaissance period would have killed to have her as a model.
"Isn't it obvious? She's perfect," he mumbled, blatantly fawning over her.
It quickly got irritating for me to watch, so I saved additional questions for later, preferably when Imogene was far away and out of his line of sight.
"Imogene, Nicholas, Leonidas,"
Alton said, nodding at the council as they took center stage.
"What brings you all here today?"
"I wish we didn't have to do this, Alton," Imogene replied, her voice as soft and sweet as the rest of her. A few more minutes of her and I would have wound up swooning like Wade.
"But we must,"
Leonidas added, in a sharp, dark contrast.
"The gargoyle incident came to our attention, and we are here to deliver a stern warning."
"It's taken care of, though."
Alton shook his head, frowning.
"No one was injured. The beast was recovered and is now back in the bestiary. There's no need for the mage council to come all the way here for that."
"That's where you're wrong,"
Leonidas replied.
"This is completely unprecedented, and frankly, it's unacceptable. No monster has ever escaped the bestiary before, and it is cause for grave concern."
There was a certain gravitas in Leonidas's voice that didn't match the honey-like sweetness of his Persian accent. He'd probably been in the States for a long time, his English almost fully set in, but his roots still crept up, particularly in the weight he placed on certain consonants. One of my earlier foster parents was Iranian by birth, and I could recognize those inflections anywhere.
"Like I said,
We have it under control,
Alton insisted, and I could feel his discomfort stiffening my joints. He really didn't like Leonidas.
We know, and we're pleased to see the bestiary otherwise well-managed here.
Imogene smiled, then put on a pained expression.
But that doesn't change the fact that a monster escaped. We cannot let that slide without repercussions, I'm afraid.
The San Diego Coven is thus stripped of 50 points,
Leonidas announced, prompting the crowd to gasp and murmur in response. An overall air of discontentment filled me by default.
Should further such incidents occur, the California Mage Council will submit an unfavorable review on the San Diego Coven, directly to the United Covens of America. You've already got slim chances of earning a decent score this year, Alton. Don't make it any worse.
And the penalties will be much more severe if other monsters get out,
Nicholas added, his double chin high and his brow furrowed.
The bestiary is our most prized possession, and it is our most dangerous, too. We can't afford any more mistakes. The San Diego Coven may have been randomly selected to manage it, but Alton, you had a chance to turn down the nomination. Instead, you assumed full responsibility. It's not a zoo, and Tobe here is not the caretaker. Death and destruction will swallow this earth if the bestiary is ever let loose. We need you all to pay attention.
That won't be the case, I can assure you,
Alton shot back, standing on the verge of fury at that point and doing his best to hold it all back. His hands balled into fists, his knuckles turning white.
Consider your stern warning received and registered. Is that all? You've been here for what, 3 years?
Leonidas replied snidely, raising an eyebrow. I had to admit I wasn't fond of the guy either. Alton nodded.
That is correct. You don't have much to show for it, Waterhouse. Get your house in order, and don't become another Halifax,
Leonidas said.
We're serious. Don't screw this up. We'll be paying extra attention to the San Diego Coven from now on.
I couldn't ignore the chill running down my spine. The California Mage Council made me feel wary. Apart from Imogene, who seemed genuinely nice, the other two had their noses so high they were probably frosted. I could only imagine what the other four were like. Elitism seemed like a defining feature for them. And after my brief stint in a California prep school, I just didn't want more of that. We were all made of the same stuff. Blood ran through our veins. We ate, we breathed, and we all certainly pooped. One's riches should never be the standard for some kind of superiority. And I sincerely loathed anyone who tried to perpetrate that idea, particularly in the 21st century, in the age of smartphones and social media, the era of fights for equality and decency. History was meant to serve as a lesson, not a guideline. Errors were meant to be recorded and later avoided, not repeated. Elitism raised the masses once, to the point where the people got angry and toppled entire monarchies. Had we really learned nothing? Alton was boiling. The mention of Halifax seemed to make a little vein pop in his temple. I could see it throbbing from where I stood. Who's Halifax? I asked Wade, who was nervous and concerned. The Mage Council and the mention of the United Covens of America seemed to hit a nerve in him, too.
The previous director of the San Diego Coven, Wade muttered. A useless slob. Always took the easy way out and hammered us into mediocrity.
He was more focused on setting a little fortune aside to buy a farm somewhere in the Midwest than on helping Magical strive to achieve more and better. Did he get his farm, then? He was penalized a fortune and fired for utter incompetence. Then Alton was brought in, Wade said. Last time I heard, Halifax was back on the East Coast, working 3 jobs to cover his mortgage. No coven wanted him after the San Diego debacle. They agreed to let him live as a rogue, but he's under constant monitoring.
Will that be all, then?
Alton repeated, gritting his teeth. Leonidas narrowed his eyes at him, and they glared at each other for what felt like an eternity. But then Leonidas chuckled, and walked back through the mirror without another word. The others followed, and they all disappeared beyond the silvery ripples of the mirrors, leaving a very annoyed Alton behind.
"I'm pretty sure we closed it up nice and tight this time," Alton said, mostly to himself. "I promise I will be more vigilant."
Tobe sighed, his massive shoulders dropping.
"There's only so much you can do, Tobe."
Alton shook his head.
"You're there all the time, and you do an exemplary job of keeping the monsters in their place. It's up to us to offer assistance. We'll just need to draw up a good plan to avoid another council visit. Levi seems eager to see us burn."
The bestiary issue sounded a lot worse now. After all, the California Mage Council had felt it necessary to step in and issue a warning. It wasn't just the danger that it posed to the outside world. Judging by how concerned the San Diego Coven Magicals felt, they were seriously worried about financial and regulatory repercussions. From what I'd learned so far, Halifax had already done a lot of damage, which Alton was trying hard to undo, while looking after the bestiary with Tobe. They simply couldn't afford any more mistakes. The worst part was that they had yet to figure out how the gargoyle had escaped in the first place, and I didn't know enough about whatever magic and technologies were used in the bestiary to form an opinion. All I could do was feel the weight of their worry, as the entire coven feared for their standing in the magical world, their funding, and their safety, as well as that of billions of humans who stood to suffer and die if the bestiary was ever set loose. Chapter 13. The crowd grew noisy around me, their restlessness bursting through me with knee-shattering vertigo and way too much anxiety for me to handle. Wade seemed to notice and discreetly wrapped his fingers around my forearm, squeezing gently, while Alton raised his voice to calm everybody down.
"Take it easy,"
Wade said, his voice low and strangely soothing.
"Everybody please, be quiet,"
Alton shouted.
"There is no reason to worry or to panic. We simply have to take additional measures so we can keep everything under control, that's all."
"How do you propose we do that?" one of the magicals asked, her sultry tone echoing from the other end of the assembly hall.
"Focus on Alton,"
Wade whispered in my ear. My skin tickled, and instead of doing as he suggested, I instinctively focused on him. Right then, he was radiating calmness and reassurance. He was the closest thing I had to an anchor that would keep me from spiraling into panic.
"We'll put together two teams,"
Alton explained, then moved toward the edge of the podium.
"One to further investigate the bestiary, and one to do an extensive follow-up cleaning in the affected areas of the city, particularly where the gargoyle was active. Like I said, chances are there might be some monster activity wherever the creature left energy residue. The investigation team will work closely with Preceptor Nomura and Tobe to look into the bestiary and check every single glass box, every charm, every spell, and every lock in that place. If needed, Preceptor Belmore will be more than happy to assist."
Judging by the look on Sloane's face, she wasn't all that happy, probably because she didn't like people in general. My kindred spirit. Wade sensed my gradual relaxation and let go of my arm. I was thankful that the crowd's emotions came in waves, or maybe my body had some kind of defense mechanism, automatically shutting them out just to give me a few minutes' worth of breathing room. I wasn't sure how to control my empath skills within big crowds just yet. Sweat trickled down my temples and neck as I inhaled deeply and regained my composure.
"If you're a good girl, I might even recommend you for the investigative team,"
Wade muttered, and I noticed a smirk stretching his lips.
"Given your newbie status, Alton will want you on the cleanup team to start you off easy. But that's lower-level stuff, for mediocres and below."
I raised an eyebrow. "I am a mediocre."
"And you're just going to be okay with that?"
he asked. He had a point. Being labeled a mediocre didn't mean I couldn't try to do better. "So what,
Does that mean you get to lead the investigative team and I'm supposed to be nice to you if I want to get in too? I replied.
That's the way the cookie crumbles, Harley, Wade said. I'm the best at what I do. Of course I'll lead.
Garrett Keitler, I'll give you a shot at leading the investigative team,
Alton said. I glanced behind me and saw Garrett beaming with satisfaction, then giving Wade one of the most arrogant smirks I'd ever witnessed. Cute, but damn, gives me the urge to punch him.
It's time you make something of yourself in this place.
Wait, what?
Wade blurted, his eyes wide as the shock settled on his face.
How? Why him? He's an arrogant idiot with no respect for authority and something bad to say about absolutely everything and everyone.
And does your offensive description of a fellow magical make you worthier of the position?
Alton replied, pursing his lips.
Besides, Garrett is an exceptional warlock, with great intuition and a set of skills that will most certainly come in handy in this endeavor. And it's time for him to shine. I believe he's already paid his dues for his bad mouth in previous covens, despite his earlier slip-ups. He deserves a chance.
Wade blinked several times, struggling to find the right words to express his outrage. I could barely stifle a chuckle at the sight of his dismay.
It's not fair. I'm far more equipped, and I'm an actual professional unlike him. I don't care what his skills are, he's done nothing but piss you off since he first set foot in this coven.
And right now, you're the one pissing me off. I'm putting you in charge of cleanup, then.
Wade gasped, his mouth wide open. He would probably have an aneurysm if someone handed him a broom in that moment. I instinctively looked around for one, just to mess with him, until I realized that my chances of getting on to the investigative team had dropped below zero without Wade's recommendation. But do I really want that? Do I even want to be involved? I kind of did. There was nothing good about monsters being let loose in the city. It put Ryan and her parents at risk, not to mention Father Thomas from the orphanage, and Malcolm, and another handful of people I didn't completely dislike. Innocent lives were at risk. And for the first time, I felt like I could actually do something about that.
Ha! Crowley's got the rag team!
Garrett chuckled, then walked toward the podium, the crowd parting before him. He passed by us and gave me a brief sideways glance and a wink. What was that about? It looked flirtatious, but I wasn't getting any emotions from him. I now counted 5 people I couldn't read. Garrett, O'Halloran, Belmore, the platinum-haired guy, and Imogene Whitehall. As I scanned the crowd, I noticed there were others whom I couldn't feel. Not many, but still enough to confirm that my empathy didn't work with absolutely everyone. I saved the question of why for later.
What can I say, Crowley? I really am very good at what I do. And as much as it probably kills you to admit it, you know it too, deep down. Despite my premature departure from my previous covens, I was the top scorer there,
Garrett added, mocking Wade.
You should stick to what you're good at. You know, lighting up candles and being the rule-abiding goody-two-shoes nobody likes. It suits you better.
Based on the confidence exuding from his tone and the frustration boiling through Wade, Garrett was telling the truth. His verbal stings were just a facade for his grand warlock skills. Several warlocks and witches chuckled, including the platinum-haired guy, whose eyes glimmered with blue, hateful fires. He definitely didn't like Wade. The brief glance he gave me announced that he wasn't too fond of me, either.
I suggest you tone it down, Keitler.
Alton interjected, prompting Garrett to abandon that smug grin.
I'm giving you a chance here. Don't blow it. Focus on your talents, not your personal dislike of certain highly skilled magicals in this coven. Now get your team in place. I trust you'll pick capable people to work with.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My apologies, Director Waterhouse.
Garrett nodded, then pointed at the platinum-haired guy.
Finch Anchor, you're with me.
I had a name for the guy at last. He was pleased with the nomination, smiling as he advanced through the crowd and joined Garrett, Alton, and Tobe on the podium. Garrett then pointed out five more magicals behind us, inviting them onto his team.
Rowena Sparks, Lincoln Monnoir, Poe Dexter, Ruby Presley, and Nicholas Jones. Time to show whoever's messing with our bestiary what we're made of, Garrett announced.
I do appreciate the enthusiasm, but you're investigating the bestiary, not leading an assault on the ancient kingdom of Troy,
Alton said, smiling.
However, you've done well with your choice of teammates. Thank you for not making me already regret this decision.
He chuckled, then switched back to his more serious self.
You'll now be liaising with Nomura and Tobe on the next steps, and you'll be reporting to me on a daily basis. Are we clear?
They all nodded, while doing secret high fives. They were all young, in their 20s, with a shared taste for smart jackets and starchy cream pants, like snotty Ivy League undergrads with magical abilities. Briefly reminded of the obnoxious characters I dealt with back in prep school, I shifted my focus back to Wade, who was watching the whole scene unfold like a horror movie. He seemed seconds away from a heartfelt bellow of pure rage. A feeling of helplessness poisoned me. It was Wade's, as he watched what I assumed to be a coveted position get occupied by someone whom he considered unworthy. It'll be a constant battle of the egos in this place.
As for the cleanup team...
You mean the rag team?
Garrett interrupted Alton, who rolled his eyes and snapped his fingers. Garrett's lips were forcibly pressed into a thin line, his eyes nearly popping out from shock. He tried to open his mouth, but couldn't. Alton had magically shut him up.
As for the cleanup team... Wade, come up here and choose the people you want to work with.
Alton continued, undisturbed, while Garrett boiled at his side. Wade let out a sigh, and I couldn't help but chuckle. Alton quickly spotted my reaction and raised an eyebrow in response, as Wade joined him on the podium with a defeated look on his face.
Congratulations, Wade. I just found you your first team member,
Alton announced, patting Wade on the shoulder.
Harley Smith, come up here. It's time to start your practical induction.
Oh, crap. All eyes were on me, a flurry of emotions pummeling me again. After a couple of deep breaths, I slowly made my way up onto the podium, focusing on counting my steps in a desperate attempt not to let myself be overrun by the feelings of 200 magicals. Amusement flickered in most of them, as I was another example of how karma worked. You only get as good as you give. I shouldn't have taken such amusement in Wade's misery. Deep breaths, Wade whispered, then searched the crowd for certain faces. Even after I'd laughed at him, he was still nice enough to try and comfort me, knowing how overwhelmed I was in that moment as an empath. I was confused. Wade seemed to have achieved the perfect balance between being a smug jerk and a kind, supportive friend. So confused right now.
Santana Katemako, Wade said,
nodding at the girl with curly black hair and chocolate brown eyes I'd seen earlier in the living quarters. He briefly explained his choice to me while the crowd murmured, and Santana made her way to the podium.
Santana is a Santeria practitioner. She's quite antisocial because of how most magicals view the Santeria culture, but she's fierce and rather easy to work with.
You find her easy to work with, Alton said under his breath. Personally, I'm glad you chose her. It'll keep her busy enough not to bicker with the other magicals.
Wait, Santeria? Like dead chickens and blood and all that creepy stuff? I asked, trying to dig through the memories of what I'd read on the subject during my long hours of internet research.
That's not what Santeria is about, Santana replied, as she joined us on the podium. You're too green and gullible to understand the intricacies of Santeria. These magicals love using the human's fictional lore to taunt me. But you'll soon learn what it's all about. They laugh now, but they all grovel when they realize they need my help to free people from brujeria curses.
I caught her subtle Mexican accent, along with a subtle sense of irritation. She was frequently misjudged, and sort of used to it, from what I could tell, but it didn't mean she liked it.
It's true, Wade murmured. She's one of the few Santeria practitioners in California, and most of them are bad hombres.
Santana smirked, taking her place next to Wade and me, then gave me a subtle nudge.
Don't worry, newbie. It might not look like it now, but you're better off with the rag team than with those mouth breathers, she said, nodding at Garrett and his team, who were sneering at us.
I was tempted to agree with her.
Tatiana Vasilisa,
Wade called out, squinting at the crowd as he looked for her. Soon enough, a tall and slender figure with long, pale blonde hair and icy blue eyes emerged, walking toward the podium. She was gorgeous, with all the cover girl features, including the perfectly glossed lips and impeccable sense of fashion. Based on the style of her jeans and iridescent silk shirt, she was into the high-end brands.
Her parents run the Moscow Coven together,
Santana explained, slightly amused.
Don't let her fabulous look scare you. She's a misfit like the rest of us. Terrible people skills. Loves drilling holes into Alton's patients. She's new here too, by the way.
And you? I asked, unable to take my eyes off Tatiana, as she glided onto the podium with a slightly dissatisfied expression.
6 months.
Santana shrugged.
I bet Wade will use newbies for the rag team. We need to be given some magical stuff to do anyway, and the other departments aren't all that keen to work with us.
Why not? I replied, trying to understand what stigmas hung over their heads.
Because we're very adept at telling people the uncomfortable truth, including what we think about them.
Tatiana joined the conversation, her Slavic accent making her stand out even more.
Californians are too politically correct for my taste. But I think we'll break them in by the end of the decade. Especially the ones who are so insecure and frustrated that they pick on witches they simply can't handle.
Both Tatiana and Santana chuckled as they glanced at Garrett and his team, who didn't look happy to see what the rag team was becoming. I couldn't feel Garrett or Finch, but the others were definitely uncomfortable. There was history between these seemingly opposite sides, but neither came across as part of a classic good versus bad formula, but rather unsociable misfits versus smug preppy jerks.
Dylan Blight, Wade continued with his selections. Get over here. You're new too. You need some practice.
Dylan didn't look like he belonged there. He seemed like the typical all-American heartthrob, with plenty of muscles beneath his red and cream varsity football jacket, short brown hair, caramel eyes, and a cleft chin that further made the overall image of him scream mundane. He belonged on a football field, not in a coven. Or at least that was my first impression.
He's been here a couple of months, like Tatiana, Santana told me, as we watched him make his way through the crowd to join us. Comes across as a good guy. Too good, if you ask me. Garrett keeps trying to get him on his side, but the boy prefers football and his human friends. He'll take some time to assimilate.
Ah, another kindred spirit. At least I wasn't the only one trying to ease into this whole magical business. Dylan gave us a broad smile, then stood next to Tatiana, whom he couldn't seem to take his eyes off, until she gave him a brief glance and he instantly looked away. He liked her. She made him nervous. I could feel it. Other than that, there was just a consistent conflict brewing inside him, something I'd experienced myself when trying to reconcile my abilities with the human world I'd been raised into.
Raph Levi, get up here, brother,
Wade called out. A tall, wiry dude with olive skin, short black hair, and the most peculiar dark gray-blue eyes stepped forward. His last name sounded familiar, and his features echoed someone I'd seen before, too. He looks familiar, I said.
He's Leonidas Levi's son,
Wade replied. Oh. Who could forget the overly pompous and mean Leonidas, the deciding vote in the California Mage Council?
He's nothing like his father, Wade said, as if reading my mind. He's different.
Raph smiled and shook his hand, and I realized that Wade was absolutely right. Raph was different, in more than one way. On the outside, he seemed peaceful, calm, and sweet. On the inside, however, I could feel the eye of a dark storm,
100 varieties of rage and malice whirling through him, all of which he kept to himself, desperate not to affect anyone. He didn't come across as evil, but there was something unsettling beneath that kind expression. Even more interesting was the look on his face, particularly when our eyes met for the first time. He stared at me, and he knew. I could feel that he knew exactly what I was. He was aware that I could feel him.
"The rag team is better than no magical work at all. Thanks, Wade,"
Raph said.
"Anytime, man,"
Wade replied, patting him on the shoulder, visibly thrilled to have Raph on board. I could feel the bond between them, too. They were close friends, a fact also confirmed by Santana.
"Raph has a troubled history with his father," she explained, keeping her voice low. "He was sent here about 3 years ago as a form of punishment, but it doesn't look like the Levi clan will take him back anytime soon. Which is cool. We like him better here, surrounded by people who actually care about him."
There was something in the way she spoke that left room for follow-up questions, but I saved them for later as Wade called out to one more team member.
"Astrid Hepler."
"Oh, this is going to be fun," Santana chuckled.
A young African-American girl came forward. Her brown eyes had specks of emerald green, and her hair was a medium curly afro. She pushed her black-rimmed glasses up the blade of her nose with one finger, then stepped up on the podium, giving Wade a brief nod before she moved to our side.
"Hi, I'm Astrid."
She beamed at me, and I couldn't help but smile back. She was full of light and warmth, just like Ryan, and I was relieved to be able to focus on her emotions instead of the crowd before us. It dawned on me then that as long as I had someone as an anchor, I could focus enough to get by without losing my mind between so many people in one room.
"Harley, nice to meet you," I replied, and we shook hands. "Astrid here is human," Santana said with a wink.
"I thought we were supposed to keep our magic away from them," I said, confused.
"Astrid is special," Santana replied. "She's been with the Coven for a while, helping on the IT side mostly. She also serves as a bridge between us and the human authorities."
"I'm the perfect witness in cases of unexplained phenomena," Astrid giggled.
"Keep her out of trouble, Wade,"
Alton said, a frown drawing a shadow between his eyebrows.
"She's had enough excitement during her last mission.
We're doing cleanup. That'll be what? Scrapping CCTV footage? Wiping any memories that weren't cleaned after the gargoyle incidents? And clearing out whatever slipped through the cracks since?"
Wade shrugged.
"It doesn't get more uneventful than that." "You'll also be looking out for monster activity."
"I told you, keep an eye out for energy residue," Alton said, crossing his arms.
He was concerned about Astrid. I figured she'd helped the Coven a lot for them to let her work here when they were all so fearful of human discovery.
"I'll pack the scanners then, no biggie," Astrid quipped. "I'm just happy to get out in the field again."
"I'm not comfortable with that," Alton grumbled.
There was something endearing about him, reminding me of Mr. Smith after I got my driver's license. He wasn't comfortable with letting me drive on my own either. Santana smirked.
"Don't worry, Alton. We'll take good care of her."
"You're a terrible influence in general, but I do appreciate your survival skills," Alton replied jokingly. "Just bring her back alive."
Finch, Garrett, and the others on their team were standing next to him. They heard everything, while exchanging amused glances and the occasional mean joke.
"Bunch of bleeding hearts,"
Finch snapped at us.
"No wonder you're stuck on the rag team. And no wonder we've had low ratings compared to other covens.
Less feelings, more magic. Let's be professional about things, okay?"
Ugh. The platinum hair and piercing blue eyes didn't work too well with that sneer on Finch's face. He irked me to unexpectedly high levels.
"How old are you, Finch?"
I asked him, as innocently as possible.
"What business is that of yours?"
he shot back, scowling at me. I had a feeling he just didn't like new people in general. Why the hate, though? What did I ever do to this boy? "Because you sound like a whiny 5-year-old who doesn't like his new kindergarten, and you're starting to get on my nerves," I spat. "I thought this was a coven, not the kid city next door." I heard chuckling around me, and from the crowd below, but I couldn't tear my eyes off Finch.
He looked as though he was about to do something stupid, and I never looked away from an aggressive fiend. He reminded me too much of the foster dad whose name I chose to forget, the root of many nightmares, and the reason behind some of the scars on my back.
Sounds like Finch just found another witch who won't put up with his nonsense.
Garrett chuckled, putting his arm over Finch's shoulders.
I suggest you and Wade take your teams elsewhere and start planning your missions,
Alton replied to Garrett.
Play nice, and report back to me by the end of the day. You've got the rest of the afternoon to work out your roles and responsibilities. Preceptor Nomura and Tobe will answer any questions you might have. Magicals? Dismissed.
The crowd instantly scattered out of the main assembly hall, while Garrett took Finch and the rest of his team off the podium.
Come on, let's go get our ducks in a row. Need to get those 50 points back, and more on top,
Garrett said, then glanced over his shoulder and gave me another wink. Seriously, is he flirting or what? One by one, the plethora of foreign emotions fizzled out of me, and my new team came into full focus. Wade was frustrated with the cleanup job, but satisfied with his choice of team members, until his gaze found mine. He wasn't too sure about me yet, but hey, I had to give him the benefit of the doubt since he didn't know me at all. Frankly, I wasn't sure how useful I'd be in this place, but I had to at least try and find out. Santana and Tatiana seemed slightly amused. I had a feeling they'd been through similar gigs before, which made them interesting to follow going forward. Dylan was stuck in limbo, somewhere between longing and excited, probably still adjusting to life as a magical. Raph was thankful, mostly to have Wade by his side, and Astrid was psyched and eager to get started. Alton was worried, on the other hand. The council's visit had taken its toll on him, and I could literally feel how much was at stake. Alton was terrified of failure of any kind. It made his blood run cold, and by the rules of empathic proximity, mine too. But what was I really feeling in that moment? If I peeled away at the layers of emotions from the magicals that I'd surrounded myself with, what did I think of all this? Well, for starters, there was a little voice in the back of my head, telling me that things were about to get even weirder, though I wasn't exactly sure how or why. But my instincts never betrayed me, and I was never short on ominous feelings. I was embarking on a new journey, with people I barely knew, but with whom I shared a primordial bond of chaos. It was strange and scary, but it also gave me some much-needed perspective on who I was, and, most importantly, who I wanted to be. Chapter 14. I can't believe they're making me quit my job, I complained, as I filled out an application form for a research assistant position in the Fleet Science Center's Library and Archives section. Shortly after the main assembly hall had been cleared, Wade and the rest of our newly formed RAG team, a term which we all seemed to hate and love at the same time, had accompanied me to one of the common rooms of the Coven. Santana and Tatiana had raided the small cafeteria for a variety of hot drinks and snacks, while Raph and Astrid were getting to know Dylan a little better. Wade was sitting next to me at the table, carefully checking the information I put into my employment form. There was still tension between us, mostly because of his strong dislike regarding my empath ability, but there was nothing I could do about that. Sooner or later, he was going to get used to it. What did he have to hide, anyway? I already knew that I was getting on his nerves. It didn't take an empath to see that.
It pays better, and you don't have to hang around all those undesirables, Wade replied, pointing at a box that required my date of birth.
I didn't have a real birthday, just an approximate, almost randomly chosen day and month of the year when I was dropped off at the orphanage.
Fill that in.
Only a few people promised not to get me any sappy cards for that date, I grumbled. It's not my real birthday, and I don't celebrate it anyway.
Why not?
Santana asked, sitting across the table and pushing a freshly brewed coffee my way.
Thanks.
I retrieved the paper cup, blowing over the hot black liquid before the first sip. I could almost feel the energy flowing through me. I don't know my exact date of birth, just that I was about 3 years old when I was left at the orphanage. I said it matter-of-factly, which didn't surprise me.
I'd gotten used to the idea a long, long time ago. My rag team, however, was nonplussed, judging by the way they looked at me. Then came pity, and I instantly hated that feeling. I hated feeling pity, especially when I knew it was directed at me.
"You're an orphan," Billin said.
He was the only one who didn't feel sorry for me. Instead, I got a whiff of understanding from him. It was a rare reaction. Most people didn't like being aware of the hardships of others. They didn't even look at the homeless veterans they passed on the street, as if they couldn't handle someone else's misery. I didn't get that luxury. I felt everything.
"So you were in the foster care system?"
he asked. "Yeah, why?" Billin smiled.
"Me too."
The idea of a kindred spirit came back, twice as loud. I couldn't help but beam at him. There were plenty of us foster kids in the San Diego area, but we had a tendency to avoid one another. Most of the kids in the system didn't turn out as well as I had. Most of them never got a family like the Smiths to guide them into adulthood, so they slipped through the cracks. Dylan looked like another fortunate exception, with his crew cut and crisp varsity jacket.
"Seriously?
I want to say that's so cool, but we both know it isn't." I chuckled, and he laughed out loud. He was so bright and jovial, so genuine, and just plain nice.
"It's okay. It kind of makes sense in this place," Dylan replied,
while Wade watched our exchange with a slight frown.
"It's why we're late bloomers, as they call us here. We got lost in the foster system, and we didn't have anyone to teach us about what we are."
"Most of us magicals join the coven at a very young age," Santana explained. "But people like you, Dylan, and others don't get that lucky. Nevertheless, better late than never, I say."
"What about you?" I asked Astrid. "How'd you end up in the coven, as a human?"
"Oh, it's a bit of a long story," she said. "I'm useful, and I do a lot of work on the IT side. You know, the usual, encryption, security, surveillance, and good old-fashioned hacking, mostly. There's only so much that magic can do in a human world dominated by technology."
"Plus, she's our only zombie," Santana said, grinning.
"Seriously? As if this conversation wasn't complicated enough, we're bringing zombies in, too?" I said, confused.
"What she means is that I've been through a couple of rough patches on field missions," Astrid replied, a blush coloring her cheeks.
"Hence, Alton allowed me to go with you guys on the rag team. He wants to avoid another incident."
"Define incident," I replied.
"I died," Astrid said bluntly. And it took me a couple of seconds to fully register that little morsel of weird. 3 times, to be precise. Alton brought me back, but the price he paid was awful.
"Huh?"
"Alton's a rare type of magical," Wade added. "He's a necromancer. One of 5 in existence."
"He brings people back to life?" I said, utterly shocked.
"It's not as easy as it sounds," he replied. "It's not easy at all. Certain conditions have to be met for a resurrection to occur. The body needs to be in good condition. Any resurrection performed after 24 hours will result in a literal mindless zombie because the brain decays fast and the neural pathways start glitching like crazy. On top of that, it takes a massive toll on Alton. After a single resurrection, he goes into an automatic purge, the worst and most painful kind, that might even kill him. The monsters that came out of him are some of the scariest things I've ever seen in my life, and I've toured the entire bestiary. Necromancy is never a solution to death, nor is it portrayed as such."
"It's kind of sad, actually," Astrid sighed. "Having that power and not being able to use it. I mean, he could, but the coven obviously has rules about that. The only reason he resurrected me is because I died while helping the coven."
"And you can't keep doing that. It's taking a toll on him in the long term, too," Wade said.
I nodded slowly, before Wade gave me a blunt nudge, pointing at the form.
"Come on, fill that out so we can work out your schedule next."
"Look at you, all stern and serious, like a mentor," Santana grinned. "I guess you're eyeing Alton's position, and you've started early prep work, huh?"
Wade shook his head.
"I found her, so she's kind of my responsibility. At least until she gets her induction. Then she's on her own."
"We both know that's not true, Wade," I replied with a smirk. He was worried about me. It was an underlying feeling that I could have missed. had I not paid extra attention. He was an interesting bundle of emotions, from what I'd gathered so far. I frustrated the hell out of him, and yet he couldn't stay away.